Howell versus Donald H. Rumsfeld.
May it please the court, counsel. This is a situation where summary judgment was granted on a discrimination case where the judge determined that there was prima facie case established, that there was evidence of pretext, and that there were statements made which could be construed and couldn't be construed any other way of discrimination on the part of the person who made the determination to promote a female over my client who was a male. First of all, we argued, excuse me, and repeat that argument, that this is direct evidence of discrimination. Now, the judge's point was that a Stan Labor, an independent witness, indicated that the person who made the decision here, Mr. Wynn, told him that he preferred working with women, that if he had any opportunity to choose between a male and a female to work with him, he would select a female.
When did he make those statements?
He made those statements, Mr. Labor said, between 1990, repeatedly, between 1991 and 1994. And part of the gist of the district court's argument is, despite the fact that those statements were made, since they were made in 91 and 94, they were too remote to show discrimination. Well, the argument would be...
Don't we have cases holding that?
No, actually, and the district court pointed that out. In this circuit, there really isn't any time limit that's been set on what type of statements you could use and how long it would take.
The period I'm talking about only.
I'm sorry?
The time frame only.
Yes, there are no specific cases in the circuit that say what the time limit should be. But more importantly, in addition to the statements by Mr. Labor, we also presented an affidavit of a female co-worker, Ms. Nelson, about his actions that took place in 1997 and 1998 when she was employed by him. In a footnote in the opinion by the district court, footnote number 2 on page 9, the district court indicated that this information was relevant because it involved 1997 and 1998 and his differential treatment of females as opposed to males at that time. So we're not only left with statements that were made in 1991 through 1994, but we had a reinforcement of those statements by actions in 1997 and 1998. We have nothing that indicates that he disavowed his previous penchant to favor women. So we feel that there is, in fact, direct evidence of discrimination. And based on the direct evidence, summary judgment could not have been granted in this case. But even if an argument can be made that because Mr. Wynn didn't specifically say that I'm not going to hire Mr. Powell for this position because I prefer to have a woman, that under the indirect proof standards of McDonnell Douglas, there was also proof that he was discriminated against. The defendant admitted, as well as the court, that a prima facie case was established. The court indicated that there was evidence that Mr. Wynn was lying and credibility issues existed, so that there was evidence of pretext in this particular case. But still, they found that, and they also took into consideration the fact that there were statements by Ms. Nelson as well as Mr. Labor. What they didn't consider, interestingly, though, is that the plaintiff himself had heard the statements made by Mr. Wynn as well. And we pointed this out in our brief that, in fact, in our brief on page 6 and page 7, we pointed out that the plaintiff had heard these statements being made on several occasions. So it wasn't just the statements being made heard by Mr. Labor in 91 and 94. Because my client worked for Mr. Wynn between 96 and 97. So he heard the statements then. In addition, Ms. Nelson worked in 97 and 98 and saw his differential treatment of males. So we feel that clearly, by the standard that's required in a summary judgment case, that is whether or not a reasonable jury could determine that discrimination occurred, where there's a prima facie case, there's evidence of pretext, There are statements made by the selecting official to the effect that he is in fact biased, that those things do permit a reasonable jury to make a determination in the favor of the plaintiff. And for that reason, we feel that summary judgment under these circumstances was totally improper. And we'd ask that the case be remanded, that the decision to grant summary judgment for the government be reversed. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
All right, counsel. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, the case that you have in front of you contains no discrimination whatsoever. The plaintiff claims gender discrimination. However, it's undisputed that the first person chosen for the job was a man. The plaintiff has not disputed that Stevens was qualified for the job. Right. In fact, the district court didn't address that, but in the 56.1 statement, Stevens' qualifications are undisputed. And in fact, the plaintiff goes on to add to those qualifications in its additional 56.1B3 statement. What was facing the selecting official in this case when Mr. Wynn had to make the decision was, of course, who's the best person for this job? Who has the communication skills that will work for this job? He had two people who had clean slates. The first was Sylvester Herring, again, the man who turned down the job. The second was McCole Stevens. Now, Mr. Powell claims that it was wrong that he wasn't on the short list. But it's, again, undisputed that Mr. Powell had at least some problems with his writing and communication ability. For in April 1997, the selecting official, only months before the decision, told Mr. Powell that there were, in fact, problems. Now, regardless of the nature of those problems, they were communication problems, and there's no dispute that Mr. Wynn honestly believed that Mr. Powell had those communication problems. What you have before you, the defendant's legitimate justification, is essentially three things, and it's more than what the district court stated in its opinion. The district court stated that the defendant's reasons were that the communication skills were required for the job, that Mr. Powell didn't have those skills. However, there's also a third or fourth thing, which is that McCole Stevens did, and in fact, all throughout the evidence that we provided to the court, and in fact in our brief, we've stated McCole Stevens was qualified for this job. There's no dispute on that. Now, as to the plaintiff's direct evidence argument, this court knows well that direct evidence means you don't have to infer anything from the statement in order to show that discrimination was at play. But the statements before the court would require inference, that Mr. Wynn, A, truly believed those statements, and B, that he acted on those statements 4 years later. The panel talks about the statements that Mr. Powell himself heard. Regardless of the fact that those statements are very self-serving, the problem with those statements, or problem with what the plaintiff supposedly heard, is that we don't know when he heard it. He told us this in his deposition. Now, plaintiff says that it had to happen in 97 or 98, but in fact, plaintiff has worked for Mr. Wynn since 1993. Again, the decision was in 1998. As to the indirect route, Your Honors, Yes, we conceded that there was a prima facie case. However, the evidence of pretext that the plaintiff has offered is insufficient to go to trial. Because under Mills, what the plaintiff would have to do, or the appellant would have to do, is show that every single reason that the defendants offered for the decision were pretextual. But yet, the plaintiff admits the number one reason, which is that Nicole Stevens was qualified for the job and Wynn believed that much. Now, granted, there is some dispute over the extent of the plaintiff's problems. But again, there too, there's an admission that Mr. Wynn believed that Powell had at least some problems. On that record, Your Honors, we believe that summary judgment was certainly appropriate. And if this court has no further questions, we would ask that you affirm the district court's opinion.
Thank you, counsel.
Counsel argues that the statement requires some inference. The statement made by Mr. Wynn was that he would always hire a female unless he found her looks to be repulsive. Always means always. There's no indication that he ever rescinded or had any revision of that philosophy of his life. In fact, all of the evidence points to the opposite, including the statements by Ms. Nelson as to what was taking place in 1997 and 1998. So for counsel to argue that you have to infer something, you have to add something to his train of thought in order to understand whether he had a discriminatory bias is just simply not supported by the record. The statement speaks for itself. He said that he would always hire a female over a male. In addition, counsel says that we have no proof that he honestly believed what he said. That he honestly, I'm not quite certain how that argument works. If he said it, if he did say that he always hires females over males, then I don't know why he would say it if he didn't believe it. So I don't know quite where to go with that, but the point is he said it. Counsel also makes an argument that the first person that was selected was a male. The person who was selected was a GS-11. The position that they selected him for was a GS-5 Target 11. And even counsel in their own briefs mentions the fact that he turned this down because of the fact that this would be a downward movement and a decrease in his pay. So the issue is not, and clearly he was an 11, nobody else was an 11. So that wasn't the issue. The issue was, having turned that down now, who should have gotten this position? It does nothing. It adds nothing to the argument to say that at some point a clearly superior male who had turned down the job, therefore there couldn't be any evidence of discrimination because a female was selected. That simply doesn't work. And there are myriads of case law, Connecticut versus Teal, for example, that makes the point that just because some one person was treated fairly doesn't mean that everybody else was not discriminated against. And it's cold comfort to that person to say, well, you treated one of my race or my sex fairly, so therefore you can go ahead and trash me any way you want to. That simply doesn't work. That's not the way the statutes have been set up. The statutes have been set up to protect individuals from discrimination. This is not a class action. We didn't bring this to vindicate the rights of every male that he's ever supervised. The question here, plain and simply, is whether or not my client was discriminated against with respect to this individual decision. And the evidence clearly shows that a reasonable jury could have made that determination. We're not arguing here that my client has to prevail. That's not the argument to be made. And under Anderson versus Liberty Lobby and all the other cases, Celotex, you don't have to establish that you're going to win. What you have to establish is that you had a right to win, that a jury could listen to your arguments and make a determination in your favor. We presented evidence from which a reasonable jury could make a determination in my client's favor, and therefore summary judgment should have been denied. And with respect, we ask that the district court's decision be reversed and that my client get the opportunity he deserves.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you both. We'll proceed to case number 8, please.